Welcome to The Bard and Bible, a conversational devotional about scripture, life, and ministry from the perspective of a tabletop missionary still trying to figure out what those words actually mean when you string them together. There's a seat by the fire over there, and it looks like things are just about to get started. Tonight's tale, A Rash Vow. Hello, friends. You have come at a most auspicious time. We've got something really special cooking, and you won't want to miss it. I'm Mike Perna, your resident dwarf bard, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to the Bard and Bible. Please have a seat. We're about to begin. I've been waiting for this for what seems like ages. I have been threatening to do this series for weeks now. But every time I sit down to try and do it, something comes up that I felt needed to be addressed. But, well, I'd love to say that things have calmed down. They haven't, but the craziness has hit kind of a plateau. And so I feel like if I'm going to do it at all, now is the time for me to take on this series that I want to do. Because I have always been fascinated with these characters in the Bible that we don't ever seem to want to talk about. The Bible is filled with them, especially the parts that are more narrative in nature. So the New Testament is very didactic. It's very like, this is a thing, and I'm writing to you to tell you about this thing and how you should act and how you should react to it and what is the proper thing and, you know, all the things that we need to do to instruct somebody. Paul is all about this instruction. But large swaths of both Old and New Testament are not written like that. They're not written with the specific instructional nature. They are told in stories. I've been fascinated by stories. And specifically, there's one book of the Bible that we'll be in tonight that is filled with stories that I love reading them. I love digesting them and figuring out what God is telling us in the lives of these men and women. And I can't remember exactly what the framework was that set up this conversation, but I was hanging out one day after church with a bunch of guys from the college group, which in my home church is referred to as Ignite, because for some reason, every group that ever gets created in a church has to be named something pithy that has to do with either fire or water. It's just what we do. But anyway, I was talking with these guys, and I brought up the concept of Ehud. And I said, yeah, you know, one of my favorite stories of the Bible is Ehud, the left-handed assassin. And these college guys, most of them, if not all of them, who I knew came up in the youth ministry, are from families who have always been a part of the church, not only just being in the church, but actively part of the leadership of the church, looked at me like I had pulled something like out of thin air. Like, what are you talking about? And I said, Ehud, the left-handed assassin, out of the book of Judges. You've heard of it, right? And they're like, I have never even heard that name before. What on earth are you talking about? Now, in this series, I'm going to get to Ehud. We're going to do Ehud. Don't get me wrong, because it's one of my favorite stories. But I wanted to take some time to kind of let that sit. Let Ehud kind of come at a different point. We're going to be in Judges for a while. But I want to talk about another guy. And I want this to kind of be the opening salvo of this series of stories about people that have always been in the Bible, but we just don't seem to want to ever talk about them. Or when we do talk about them, we just kind of blow past them and not give them much attention. Before I get into that, I want to talk about another story. A story that, oddly enough, came to my attention from a much loved, at least by me, television show that for the longest time I was convinced I must have made up because no one else had ever heard about it. It was only recently that other people started reminding me that this was in fact a thing, and they had pleasant memories of it much like I did. When I was a kid, it was usually on the weekends, but there was a show. It was Jim Henson. Jim Henson would start every episode by talking to us about different folk tales and legends. And it was great because, really looking back on it, I didn't realize it at the time, but this was the beginning of my own passionate love of storytelling. Because, like every good story, you need to have a storyteller. And in this series, Jim Henson's The Storyteller, the storyteller was played by John Hurt, a phenomenal actor, a gifted and talented man. And he had a dog, and his dog was voiced, I believe, by Brian Henson. I know Brian did it at some point. I don't know if Jim Henson started it or if it was always Brian Henson, but that's another thing entirely. And every time he would open up and he would talk about folklore from Germany and Ireland and all sorts of, it was mostly European, at least in the first season. And one of the stories that he mentioned was a story called Hans My Hedgehog. And I later did research on where this story came from. It's actually a story created by the Brothers Grimm. And it focuses on this guy named Hans, who is the son of a couple who are farmers. And they tried and tried and tried to have a kid, but when that kid was born, he was born this hideous hedgehog-looking creature, part man, part hedgehog. And to make a very long story short, that doesn't necessarily have to do anything with Jephthah, the story varies from telling to telling, but it usually ends up with at least one king. Some stories have two, but at least one king who wanders into the woods, and Hans helps him. And the king goes, "How can I ever repay you?" And Hans says, "Give me whatever it is, the first thing that greets you when you come home." And the first thing that greets him is his daughter. This leads to a whole bunch of other shenanigans, but I remember the first time I read the story of Jephthah, one of the judges of Israel, and I remember hearkening back to this folktale that I'd heard. Because Jephthah made a similar vow and had a similar result. And I thought in the back of my head, I wonder if the Brothers Grimm had this story in their mind as they told this. If the Brothers Grimm had crafted this narrative into this decidedly German setting. Because you'll see that, much like the king in that story, Jephthah, it doesn't end well for Jephthah. And we'll definitely explore a little bit about that. But I think I need to let you know about Jephthah. If this series really is going to be about people you don't know, you should probably know at least what the biblical text talks about him. Jephthah was the son of a prostitute. And to say the least, his life was very difficult. Because his half-brothers, the sons born to his father from his actual wife, said, "We want nothing to do with you. You have no place in this family. You have no place with us. Leave." So they basically chase him out. His own family chases him out. And he says, "All right, fine. I'm gonna do my own thing." And so he goes off and he travels to this other land and gathers up with him. Because one thing that's very clear in the biblical text when it talks about Jephthah is that Jephthah is a mighty warrior and a natural leader. And so, despite the fact that he was chased out, people were drawn to him. And the text, depending on your translation, is going to have, you know, different words used to talk about these guys. Everything from the very pleasant sounding gathered up adventurers to the less pleasant understanding of worthless men. No matter how you spin it, Jephthah gathered some rough and tumble dudes. And he kind of just settled into his life. However, the people of Israel had a problem. And that problem was the Ammonites. And the Ammonites had risen up against them and were threatening to do battle. And so when nobody knew what they were going to do or how they were going to survive this, the people eventually went back and found Jephthah, the mighty warrior, the natural leader. And they said, please, please, you need to come back. You need to save us from the Ammonites. And he agrees. I found this whole thing fascinating for a couple of different reasons, because there are some judges that God calls, that God himself says, I'm sending you to do this. And there are some that are assigned, as it were, by men. They are sought out by other people. And Jephthah is this latter one. But as Jephthah is kind of sworn in as judge, judge being this all-around term for a civic, military, he's in charge of everything. So as Jephthah's kind of signed on for this, it says that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. And it says it a couple different places. And so even though it was the elders that said, you know, Jephthah, we need your help, God witnessed this. God came in and said, I agree with this. I'm giving my spirit to this man to lead my people. But there was an interesting thing about what happens when it's a decidedly different notion when the Old Testament says the Spirit of the Lord came upon a person than it was when in a New Testament context. It's just a different vibe. Because we talk about the dwelling of the Holy Spirit, and it's a permanent thing. It doesn't leave. It's about what comes about when you believe in God, when you put your faith in God, you receive the Holy Spirit. Back then, the Spirit of God came on you for a task. It was given to people to do a thing, to empower them to make something happen. It didn't mean that you were necessarily going to be acting according to God's will. It meant you had been given power and authority. That's going to be very important when I tell you about what Jephthah did. Now, Jephthah was a good guy. He took charge, and as the Ammonites were building up their forces, as they were threatening to assault the people, he sent the king a letter, and he said, why are you doing this? Jephthah sought peace. He didn't want to go to battle, despite the fact that the very first description of him says that he's a mighty warrior. He wasn't looking for it. And it basically came down to this disagreement. The king of the Ammonites basically said, when Israel came up from Egypt, they stole my land. And Jephthah kind of calls back a bunch of the history, and he says, look, you know, we came through here and we asked to come through, and we were told we couldn't. And eventually, you know, we went to battle. It wasn't stolen. We didn't take it. We went to battle because God gave us this place. Much like your God gave you your place. We wanted to do this peacefully, just like we want to do it peacefully now. And it was you who made it a battle. But sadly, to make a very long section of Judges 11 kind of condense that a little bit, so we're not, you know, spending all time on these details, it does eventually come to blows. It does eventually come to war. And this is when we get Jephthah's vow. Jephthah, basically, as he's preparing for battle, asks God to give the Ammonites into his hands. He asks God for victory in battle. But he doesn't just say, Lord, give me victory in battle. He doesn't do that. What he then says is, if you give me victory here, against the Ammonites. I will offer up whatever greets me at my door as a burnt offering to you. Remember that story that I told you at the beginning? The story that I'm convinced the Brothers Grimm borrowed parts of this one from? I think you know what's coming. Jephthah does have victory. In fact, he conquers 20 different cities. It is without doubt across the board victory. He is not even challenged. And he comes home and it's his daughter with tambourine and shouts, greeting him at the door, welcoming him home after a successful campaign. And at this point, Jephthah is destroyed. Jephthah rips his clothes and he just begins to mourn and to wail because this is his only daughter, his only child. And he has to tell her what he said to God. Now, scholars will differ exactly on what happens next because it doesn't go into gory details. But either way, it's not good. Now, the people who will want to kind of give Jephthah a little bit of an out, and really it is based on a good portion of scripture because, yeah, human sacrifice isn't cool. It's pretty clearly delineated. Don't do that. But you also got to realize that Jephthah is coming from a distinctly half-pagan outlook. So the idea of, you know, him evoking these other gods and him being, you know, not necessarily outside of familiarity with the practice of human sacrifice, it might not be out of turn to think that his daughter was a sacrifice. And this time, there was no ram in a thicket. The other option is that instead of literally sacrificing her, that she would simply be offered up to the temple as servant, in service to the temple, that she would live her life without marrying, without taking a husband, without having a family. And you know, nowadays it's like, okay, that's not nearly as bad as killing, but you got to realize that in this day and age, not only is it going to be grief for her and something that she would have to, I mean, this isn't service that she chose. This isn't her saying, you know, I want to dedicate my life to God and service at the temple. This is this being forced upon her. And even if this is the way we go, even if it doesn't end with sacrifice, it still ends in sacrifice. And it not only affects the daughter, but it does also affect Jephthah because this is his only child. When she dies, so dies his family. So there's a lot here. And, you know, because this is story. This isn't, here's problem, solution, moral. I always go back to Jephthah. I always want to point this out because there are so many times when we want to make it so that when you're following God, everything is perfect. Everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be, and everything is within the realm of it's going to be okay. No matter which camp of scholars you side with, this doesn't end okay. And this is coming from the actions of a man who had the Spirit of God upon him. Now, there's a couple things I want to cite here, a couple things to dwell on. I'm not just telling this story and leaving it up. I do want to give you guys something in this story, in this narrative. And it really focuses on two things. I want to talk about Jephthah, and I want to talk about Jephthah's daughter. There's something that strikes me about Jephthah. I don't want to say that Jephthah is stupid, because I don't think he is. He's obviously a powerful leader. He's a good tactician. He's an amazingly talented warrior. So the dude has a lot going for him. I don't think it's stupidity. I think it's zeal. I think it is that passion. He wants the win. And I honestly think he does want the win for God. But I think in that zeal, in that passion, he says something that he can't take back. He does things that can't be overlooked or stopped. The thing that I always think about when I think of Jephthah is that zeal does not equal infallibility. Passion does not equal clarity. We're living in times when there is plenty of people with plenty of zeal. And sometimes that's done in amazingly powerful and wonderful ways. And sometimes it's really disastrous. Sometimes we find ourselves being Jephthah. In our pursuit of godliness, in our pursuit of doing what God would have us to do, we say and do terrible things. And I want us to take a minute to realize that no matter how this story ends, whether it ends in the death, in a very literal sense, of Jephthah's daughter, or it ends with a slow burn kind of death of Jephthah's legacy and of his daughter forced into service that she didn't ask for, there are powerful consequences when we put our zeal before our actually seeking God. And I know that might sound like semantics, and it might sound like a fine line, but I think it's important that we realize that. That sometimes to use the old proverb, we put the cart before the horse. We let our zeal go before our actual pursuit of God. We put our zeal for Him before our actual pursuit of Him. We so desperately want to do what we think is right that we forget to ask if it actually is. Jephthah, as a judge, had the hand of God upon him, had the Spirit of God laid upon him, saying, "I have given this man power and authority to do my will." And yet, he ends up victorious, but at an incredibly high a cost. But before you think I'm going to just end this story with that incredible downer, I want to also point to Jephthah's daughter. Because Jephthah's daughter, even though this story does not end well for her, is somebody that must be upheld in this narrative. Jephthah's daughter had plenty of time to have an out here. She didn't make a vow. She didn't make this decision. Her father did. And she had every right to say that this is not mine to give. This is not, I had nothing to do with this. But instead, she grieves and she steps into it. Because you cannot promise that kind of thing to God and not follow through on it. Especially when God made good on his end. God did give them victory. I am amazed at Jephthah's daughter. I want to read in chapter 11 of the book of Judges, which all of this story takes place in, and you can read the account of all of this in there, from his vow to the victory to all that stuff. But I want to start reading in verse 36. Of all the passages that I could read to you from this section, I want to read this. I want to read the response of Jephthah's daughter when she found out about her father's vow. And she said to him, "My father, you have opened your mouth to the Lord. Do to me according to what has gone out of your mouth, now that the Lord has avenged you on your enemies, on the Ammonites." So she said to her father, "Let this thing be done for me. Leave me alone 2 months, that I may go up and down on the mountains and weep for my virginity, I and my companions." And so he said, "Go." Then he sent her away for 2 months, and she departed, she and her companions, and wept for her virginity on the mountains. At the end of the 2 months, she returned to her father, who did with her according to his vow that he had made. She had never known a man, and it became a custom in Israel that the daughters of Israel went year by year to lament the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite 4 days in the year. Again, it could go either way. It either ends, because this passage is vague. It says it was done to her as was said in the vow. It could be that he ended her life because that was the vow. Or it could be that she was kind of press ganged into service. Either way, she stepped into it saying, "You made a promise to God." And regardless of how I think about it, we cannot take back that promise. Jephthah is not the hero of this story. He was given victory. He was proclaimed a judge. But Jephthah is not the hero of this story. In her own way, Jephthah's daughter is the role model here. Jephthah's daughter is the one that we should look to. Jephthah was a mighty warrior and a skilled leader, because no matter where he went, people flocked to him. But in a lot of ways, he was a fool. And having only served as a judge for 6 years, he passed away. It says so later in this chapter. I don't know, honestly, whether or not his daughter was killed or whether or not she was put into service. I don't know. A lot of men and women, a lot smarter than me, are still discussing that. But I can't not talk about Jephthah. And I can't deny that he is in our Bible, because there is a possibility that this vow ends with a man killing his daughter and God letting it happen. I want to wrestle with that story. I want to wrestle with it. I want to cry out to God and wonder what on earth is happening here. I want to look at Jephthah and see myself, or at least the potential for me to be Jephthah. Because it's only when I get to see myself in the shoes of Jephthah that I make sure that I keep myself in check. And I want to tell you the story of Jephthah's daughter, because Jephthah's daughter is a story worthy of the telling. If you'll allow me to keep the trend of all the episodes I've done so far, Jephthah's daughter is a dwarf bard who refused to bend this vow that her father made, careless as it was. She knew that when you spoke a promise to God, you followed through with it. And though it cost her everything, she entered into it because you do not go back on your word given to God. Jephthah's daughter is a dwarf bard who refused to let anyone see her as suboptimal. So much, in fact, that her sacrifice was remembered, and that for 4 days, the daughters of Israel remembered and wept for her. I look forward to telling more of these stories with you. I look forward to exploring some of these people that have just absolutely fascinated me. We don't like to talk about some of them. I don't know of many people who are super excited to talk about Jephthah or his daughter. But that's what we're going to be doing. If you have a story from the Bible that you passionately love, but you don't ever hear anybody talk about, let me know. You can either write me at mike@inroadsministries.com, or you can comment in the tavern. Because I want to tell these stories. I want to dig in and point out a little bit more about these people who God thought needed to be in our Bibles, but who we often disregard or overlook. We will continue to do that next time here at the Barden Bible.